As many of you know, since last summer, I have been working with a small interfaith group called Welcoming Bozeman to bring more understanding and support for cultural diversity in Bozeman and the Gallatin Valley. During that work, I have had the opportunity to meet many people from other cultures, and it is my pleasure this morning to introduce two of them to you. Sina Tane is from Iran and is studying engineering at MSU. And Rania Al-Suni is from Libya and is studying political science. I have asked them to share their stories of the vetting process they went through to come here, which many people don't seem to understand, and their concerns about the impact of the travel ban on them and their families. They are willing to stay afterwards and chat with you during coffee hour also. So Sina, if you would begin.
Hi everyone. My name is Sina, and I'm doing my last semester doing electrical engineering at MSU. I'm from Iran, and I wanted to talk about the procedure of how to obtain U.S. visa. And actually, it's not that quite easy that some of you might think. So the major type of visa that U.S. offers is only educational type of visa. So there's no tourist visa. When I say no, it's like the acceptance rate is less than 1%. So no tourist visa, no investment visa, none of other kinds of visa. It's only educational. You either come for studying or for research or to teach. You have to have some, or you have to have some extraordinary kind of skills, like you are a world champion or you have won a medal or something, or Nobel Prize. So the first thing that I had to go through was, first I had to provide somewhere between $40,000 to $55,000 in my own personal account, or in my father's or my mom's. So that is a very tough and challenging thing, because even if, like, think about it, even if you have $50,000, you wouldn't keep it in your saving account, you would invest it in somewhere. So, and also the other thing was, I had to provide all my transcripts for last 3 years of high school and translate them, get it verified by Ministry of Foreign Affairs, Department of Justice, and a few other organizations that I forgot. you have to go, we don't even have a U.S. embassy in our country. So just imagine how hard it is to obtain that visa. Like, where do you want to go for an interview? Where do you want to obtain that visa? We have to travel to a secondary country, like Dubai, like Turkey, or three other countries that U.S. embassy offers. To be fair, I know this not having an embassy, it all comes from the 30 years ago, which that embassy issue happened in Iran, and there were like people occupying the embassy, and I totally understand this part. I think it is fair not to have embassy in Iran, not yet at least, until everything is solved. So after we go to another country, like I went to Dubai, we go through an interview. And once you're done with your interview, you have to go through background check and security clearance, which is done by NSA and other multiple security agencies. It might take anywhere between 3 days till, I don't know, 3-4 years. Luckily for me, it was only 3-4 days. I had to give another types of documents to the embassy that they required further, and then I could come to the U.S. From the day that I decided until the day I stepped inside the United States, it took me like a year, I would say. And these are all just the U.S. visa things. On the academic part of it, it's another whole procedure. Like that takes a few months as well. So it is quite difficult. And in fact, people, not actually people, like I would say 10 to 20% of them think that people coming from these seven countries are vast majority of immigrants, which is not. Iranian students only are 1% of international students in the US. There are only 10,000 US visas offered to Iranian students, and it is not actually for us, it is in the favor of the US itself, because 90% of Iranians coming here, they're doing PhD and postdoc. In fact, like, the whole process is there are so many and multiple layers of filters and everything for selecting the most intelligent people, that one top 1% elite society of these seven countries, that the result is, even in a small society like, even in a small academic society like Bozeman, small like electrical engineering department, 2 out of 15 professors are Iranians. 5 PhD students out of 15 are Iranians. And that is, compared to our 1% student visas that we receive, we are the first country, we are the top ranked country offering PhD students to the US. And about my own personal life that I had here and also the impact by the executive order, it was pretty tough, I would say. We students understand you want to secure the borders. It is a very great plan. I actually totally agree with it. But it is kind of putting everyone in a box and judging everyone the same way. We are just a normal students. If your ancestors came to the US with a US dream, we came here with a US goal. We are not dreaming for it. We try our best to earn every bit of it. We don't receive the freedom and the opportunities that you guys have here for granted. And we appreciate it much more than regular people. It might not be the same thing that you guys think, but coming to the US for us, at least for me, when I say us, like Iranian students in the US, is a great opportunity. This is something that we didn't have in our country. That's why, and we really dreamed big for it. That's why we traveled from other side of the world to come here to achieve our goals, to plan for it, to have a better life. Same way that your ancestors came from Europe for American dream. And I think it is actually good to meet with people, international students or people from other countries, to just to understand how they think, what their beliefs are, and how different they are. And if you do so, you will realize they're just normal people like all of us. Like, people are people. I understand that governments are different, and I do not represent my own government. In fact, I do not agree with everything that they do. I'm just a normal person, like all of you guys. I'm just a normal student, not something extraordinary. I'm just trying to be good, study, and have a normal life, which I couldn't have in Iran. And I hope this speech was helpful. Thank you.
Short. Good morning. Thank you for having me. When I heard about this, I was really encouraged by it, and I couldn't say no. And so thank you. So my name is Rania. I'm 23 years old. I study political science here. I was born and raised in Benghazi, Libya. And Libya, I'm not a fan. I never felt like I belonged. And there's multiple layers to this. For one, the education system was very weak and corrupt. I mean, it was under a dictatorship, so it can have been great. But So you wear, everyone wears the same uniform, they go to school, they stand in a straight line, they recite things about the dictator as him being a lone falcon and him guiding the nation, and then in single file you go to your classroom where you learn things that only what they wanted you to learn. And so I never felt like I could get anywhere. And it felt like I had already reached the end of the tunnel, where no matter how hard you worked, you would still have to choose between the only three viable options, which is engineering, medicine, and English, and you would, that wouldn't even get you anywhere. And then there's another layer to this, which is, you know, my mom is Greek, my dad is Libyan, but I took after my mom, and I looked like my mom. And so I was lighter than most, and people reminded me of that constantly. And I was caught between expressing myself in Arabic, Greek, and English. And so I felt out of place, personally, racially, and linguistically. I can identify as Libyan. At the same time, I grew up watching, you know, American movies, American TV shows. I listened to American music, you know, Fleetwood Mac, The Police, Cat Stevens. My dad listened to the Bee Gees and liked them. I didn't. So I developed this utopian view of the U.S., you know, land of the free, land of equal opportunities, where it didn't matter what your race was or what your background is or what your sexual orientation is. It's just only your work and how hard you work. That's what mattered. Which is why when my friend told me about this exchange program in the U.S., short term, 6 weeks long leadership program, she had me at U.S. And I applied instantly. But I would come to apply to two visas to be where I am today. And collectively, it was a year long. But this first visa that I applied for took 6 months. And the problem is that Libya at the time was in conflict. The Arab Spring had already started, and I lived in Benghazi, and the US embassy at the time was open, but it was in Tripoli. And so to put it into perspective, it's saying I'm in Bozeman, but the embassy is in Seattle. And so I had my interview, I did it over Skype, and then they told me that 3 months later, all the background checks, all the information I could give them, they said, yeah, you got your visa, you should come grab it. And I'm like, I will, but it's kind of hard at the time because the airport in Benghazi was closed, and the nearest airport was about 3-4 hours away, which is not the problem. The problem is that there are multiple checkpoints on the way, and sometimes you don't know who guards them. Is it the army? Is it a local militia? You don't know. And so my dad and I decided to go through with it, and we started driving to the airport. And luckily we got there and then flew to Tripoli and then stayed there for the night. Next morning I went to the embassy. It's this huge compound. And they stopped us at the gate, and the guy had sort of like a metal detector, but it wasn't. And he sort of went around the car and then asked me for my passport, and then called the embassy inside to confirm that I had an interview. And so after that happened, we went in to the parking lot. Like, this was all just to park inside. And then I had to get into the actual compound, and they didn't let my dad come with me. And so I went into this small room where you drop off all your things and you go into another metal detector, and then you go in and wait, sit down and wait until someone comes and gets you. And then they walked me to the compound and they made sure I saw the least as possible. And they grabbed your fingerprints and all that. This was my first visa. This was easy compared to the second. They gave me my visa and then I flew back to Benghazi and did the same drive. And then when it came time for me to actually come here, I had to do the same process again. Drive to the airport, go to Tripoli, and then land here. And I landed in Detroit, and I was so happy. I mean, talk about American movies that felt like Eddie Murphy in Coming to America. If you've seen, yeah. So for 6 weeks here, I mean, I had the greatest time ever. The problem was, though, that the situation back home had escalated while I was here, and the very airport I flew out from was bombed days later. And so I was now stuck in the US because I had no way of getting back. And to add to that, the English department in Benghazi was bombed. And so even if I could go back, I couldn't go to school. And I was extremely lucky in that I had a support system here. I knew professors here, and they said that they would help me enroll and go to MSU. The only problem is now that I had to get a different visa. And you can switch it here. You can't say, hey, here's my visa, give me another one. I had to leave the country again to apply for a different type of visa. Problem was now that the US embassy in Libya had closed. And so I couldn't go home to begin with. And I had to find somewhere else to go to. And luckily, my sister lived in Egypt at the time. So I flew to Cairo and crashed on her couch for 4 months. For 4 months, yeah. I went through the same process again, interviews, extensive paperwork, just waiting. The worst part is waiting. Waiting and waiting and waiting and not knowing whether you'll get it or not. There's also another dimension to this, is the cultural barriers. Being a woman, it's not easy to travel and live abroad and on your own. There's a cultural stigma. So as much as the visa process is hard, it's also convincing your parents, comforting them and telling them, you know, I'll be okay, which is... You would think it's easy because there was a civil war in Libya at the time. You'd think it's a no-brainer, but still, those cultural roots run deep. And so I came here. This was almost 3 years ago. I hadn't seen my parents since. And I had planned to see them this summer. And when the travel ban happened, I was emotionally devastated. I called my parents and they said, no, don't come see us. We want you to finish your degree, which is, it must be hard for them to tell me that it was okay, it's okay for you not to come see us. But where am I today? Studying a major I love. I've connected with professors in a way that I haven't in Libya. I live with a host family that's taken me in as one of their own. And you know, my host grandmother's just right there, Johanna Prindeville. And so to finish, it's really the support system I have here that gets me through, and I choose to remind myself of that in times of trouble. And it's really when I traveled here that I was able to step back from Libya and appreciate being Libyan and identify as such. And so while it's a difficult time, I really appreciate the community here, definitely. Thank you.